We've gotten used to the idea that the parking spaces closest to the door are painted blue and reserved for people with disabilities. Ramps for wheelchairs and talking crosswalk signs have become common over the last few decades. We acknowledge people with disabilities, but how often do we just talk about the challenges they face and how we all work together as a society? Oregon Humanities is hoping to make those talks more frequent. The Conversation Project of Oregon Humanities offers such a talk called Understanding Disability, Family and Community Stories. Our first guest is the moderator. The program comes to the Eugene Library next Wednesday, the 27th at 6 p.m. Jill Crawford Hurt is a writer and activist and calls herself a proud member of the disability community. Jill, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Sure, good to have you. And what does that mean, proud member of the disability community? What has been the issue you've dealt with for years now?
Well, I think when people either are born with a disability or acquire a disability, they kind of have a choice to make about, is this going to be something that they feel like holds them back, or are they going to embrace their status as a member of a minority group and figure out how to make connections with other people and even how to make connections with like the social and political aspects of being a person with a disability. Not everybody chooses to view disability that way, but for me, that's what it means to be proud, is to make connections with my community in that way.
The idea of people with disabilities as a minority group, is that one that often gets poo-pooed by people who are not in that group?
Well, I think it is. I think, like currently if you look at the presidential debates, how often is the disability community mentioned? Are we seen as, like a voting force? That type of thing. There's a lot of ways in which I think the general population doesn't recognize how much power we could hold as a minority group if we choose to kind of work together on it. Not only people with disabilities, but politicians or public policymakers also need to take into account that we have family members, we have friends, so it's an even larger group when you stop and think about our allies in terms of family members and friends and that type of community building.
I was noticing that this is not an insignificant minority, if we want to think it in those terms, because it's more than 10% of the population. I understand about 12% of the American population living with disabilities and 14% in Oregon.
So it's interesting. The Conversation Project, what I use to kind of help people connect with, is this an issue, is my disability something that I'm just trying to avoid or, quote, overcome? Or is it something that I can make connections to the community? I use in the Conversation Project the historic photos, because I think it helps people kind of engage that thought process of what stories did I grow up hearing, whether I'm a person with a disability or not? What stories did I grow up hearing about people in my community or family members that maybe had disabilities? Were those stories empowering stories? Were they, stories of people being institutionalized? Or were they stories of people still having jobs, getting educations, that type of thing? And through using historic photos, I think it helps people kind of understand where we've been, and then, how have things changed, or how have they not changed enough yet?
Jill Crawford Hurt is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, writer and activist, and the moderator of the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project about living with disabilities, talking about disabilities, which she'll bring to the Eugene Library Wednesday the 27th at 6 p.m. rather. You can join us here on the Exchange right now at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned bringing historic photos to the Conversation Project. What is there one in particular that stands out above the others, and what does it portray?
One of the photos that I used, actually, it's a personal favorite. It shows two National Guard officers and then an Army officer kind of facing each other, and the Army officer is pushing an old, you know, what we would think of now as like hospital-style wheelchair with a little girl in it. And as part of the activity, what we do is we have people imagine, so if you found a box in your attic with these old photos, what's the story in the photo? And people create kind of their own stories, but the story with this, I think, is really connecting to MLK Day just happening. This is a news press photo, and it's of a father during integration times trying to get his daughter, who has a mobility impairment, into the local school and being turned away. So it's interesting when you think about, you know, civil rights movement, integration for blacks, and how much later that actually happened for people with disabilities. And when I do this in the program, it's like some people, it didn't even connect for them until we talk about that, about how many years later was it that the Education of Handicapped Children Act happened in 1975, that was finally our guarantee that kids with disabilities should be included or mainstreamed in general education schools as opposed to institutions, or just not educated at all. So for me, that picture is my favorite, because it just kind of, it's a shock value, I think, for people to realize how much more time it took for people with disabilities to begin to acquire their civil rights.
Well, by the calendar, yeah, we're talking 10 years after the Voting Rights Act that this law passed to get people an education. And then, you know, when you think back to integration by race in schools, everybody can remember famous photos, often the names of the people who were the first to attend institutions, Governor Wallace standing in the doorway in Alabama, all those sorts of things. And it seems like there wasn't nearly as much fanfare for what you're talking about.
Exactly. And I mean, within the disability community, we have those role models of success. Ed Roberts was a leader in the disability community, and he was one of the first people with a significant disability. He was a polio survivor, used a wheelchair full-time, also used an iron lung to breathe at night. He was one of the first people to be accepted into a California university, UC Berkeley, and he kind of went from there to create disabled student services for students at universities, and then also independent living centers, which are peer mentoring and advocacy type of organizations that now are all around the country. But yeah, for him to go to the university, it wasn't, on one hand, you know, there wasn't the visible resistance that would have been encountered in the 60s with blacks integrating into a university or public school system. But at the same time, because there wasn't that visible resistance, then it's also, people may not know about it as much. You know, those photos don't exist of him rolling into class first day. It's equally important, but it's a piece of history that most people don't know. Whether or not they have a disability, you really kind of have to seek out those connections to understand the history of the disability rights movement.
Well, and as you pointed out, the connections do exist. You mentioned it already. It occurred to me as well that if we're talking 12% or 14% of the Oregon population, and then there are family members and friends, and so there's a larger portion of the population that at least has concerns about people living with disabilities. So likely allies there for sure. It would certainly seem to people without disabilities that progress has been made if you think about just the physical structures, you know, the handicapped parking spots and ramps and all that sort of thing. But what's the perspective from people who live with disabilities? I mean, has as much progress been made as should or could have been made?
Well, I think that there's still a lot of progress. I think, you know, obviously I'm 48. I was a young adult when the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed. It was incredibly empowering for me to be able to say, hey, you know, if this business isn't going to build a ramp or isn't going to quickly adapt the ADA regulations, then I, for the first time in my life, felt like, well, I have that consumer power. I can choose not to shop there. and I can help that business understand that they're going to be turning away a lot of customers if they don't, you know, care about making those changes. We just celebrated the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act last summer, and I think that although that law has certainly made huge impacts on, you know, people being able to just access programs and services in their community, people having the opportunity to, you know, finally have some sort of civil rights to help them gain employment. You know, the employment rate of people with disabilities is still very, very low by comparison to the general population. And, you know, in recent economic hard times, it would be shocking if the unemployment rate was really looked at for people with disabilities. I think there's still a lot of attitudinal barriers as far as, you know, even when people see, oh, you're not employed, well, people make up excuses for why that person may not be able to be employed, where really that's, to me, that's the area that needs the most work still. Even though the law is there, there's still a lot of attitudinal barriers about employing people with disabilities.
Jill Crawford Hurd, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, writer and activist, and the leader of the Oregon Humanity Conversation Project discussion called Understanding Disability, Family and Community Stories, coming to Eugene next Wednesday, the 27th at 6 p.m. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jill, a couple minutes ago, you used the, when you said overcoming disabilities, you said, quote, unquote, overcome. Why is that a quote-unquote for you?
Well, for me, having a disability is an important part of who I am. I manage the mobility. I have a mobility impairment. I have a hereditary neuropathy, so I use leg braces, crutches, wheelchair for mobility. I use hand controls to drive a car. I manage those things the same way as somebody with diabetes would manage their health by taking insulin or, you know, controlling it through diet, that type of thing. I think there's a mindset, and it kind of harkens back to, you know, the polio era, where to be a polio survivor, you were more successful if you were overcoming it, if you kind of almost became normal again. And I think that that mindset of you have to overcome, you have to be better than the bad image that you or society has of disability. Whereas from my point of view, it's part of who I am. I wouldn't be me without it. And I manage the logistical issues about my disability, but I don't try to ignore the fact that it's a very important part of what makes me who I am.
In terms of the Conversation Project itself, who are the people that you're most hoping will come, and what is the greatest need for understanding yet in society?
You know, with the programs that I've done in the past, it's interesting. It is kind of a self-selecting group. I've had a lot of people with disabilities, family members, people that work in like service and helping professions, and it's great to hear people's personal stories, like what their connection is to the disability community. But I guess for me, I'd like to see more of the, quote, general population come, people that don't even think that they have a connection necessarily through, you know, a family member or their employment, because I think everybody does have kind of their own mindset, and their own mindset might be that, you know, they heard stories about their grandma who, like for me, I had a great-great-grandma who had a mobility impairment, but the stories that I heard was, oh, she worked the farm every day right alongside her husband. So those stories are kind of lingering out there for everyone, and I think the more that people who maybe don't even realize they have a connection come to programs like this, they'll realize that, oh yeah, that is part of my own family history or my own community history. And it just, to me, it helps when people begin to make that connection, then it helps open their eyes about what they can do in the here and now to help promote civil rights for people with disabilities. But until they, you know, kind of stop and think about their own stories, they may not recognize how they can impact that.
And in fact, it seems like considering the where medical technology has come and our ability to deal with diseases like polio, for example, that there may be more of those stories in our background than we do, in fact, realize.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so how many, I understand we're scheduled in Eugene. Are there any or other schedulings of this discussion coming up?
Absolutely, yes. In February, on the 16th and 19th, I'll be doing presentations through the Multnomah County Library System. And then on the 21st, through McMinnville Library.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything? Have you gotten to Southern Oregon with this conversation yet?
You know, I have not been invited down to Southern Oregon yet. I've been to quite a few other parts of the state, but I've not had the opportunity to come down there yet. So
okay,
that would be a welcomed opportunity.
All right, we just put the bug in their ear then. The discussion,
exactly.
The conversation project at Oregon Humanities that we're talking about is called Understanding Disability, Family and Community Stories. Jill Crawford Hurt is the leader. She brings it to the Eugene Library Wednesday the 27th at 6 p.m. Jill, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.